1, 2.
Welcome to Two for the Road with Matt and Adam.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Adam. We're a weekly movie pairing podcast. Every week we'll pick a theme, recommend a movie to the other guy he's not seen based on the theme, watch and discuss.
And we have a 25-year age difference, so we have a different set of movies that we've watched.
Yeah, and this month we're doing a little different. We are looking at Oscar fails, looking at what won and what should have won. Mm-hmm. And so this year we are in, 1998? I was probably still going to the theater a little bit, but I was 18. I was, you know, doing other things, mostly sitting on couches and eating gel tabs. So, you know, a lot of Dragon Ball Z in my timeline. How about you? What was your movie going experience in 98?
I was living in California, so I was living in Berkeley. So I was probably going to the movies every weekend.
Okay.
And sometimes during the day, you know, but so many great theaters in the Bay Area. I mean, but one of my favorites was the UC Berkeley Theater. They used to change their movies almost every day, so that was pretty cool.
But. Yeah. So I asked you, like, make a top five, and I was having trouble, like, there's a lot of movies where I was like, I should probably put that on there, like American History X, but I'm like, I never have watched that again. I watched it once, and I was like, okay. And I was like, and for some reason in my mind, I thought that movie was, like, from, like, 94. I can't believe that was 98.
Yeah. But is it the Oscar? Is it 97? Or when was this made? Oh, yeah, 98. You're right. Yeah, I had better. Here, go back to my list.
There's a lot of, like Rounders.
Right.
Yeah, good movie.
Good movie.
I don't know. I've never revisited it. I'm sure I'd like it. So I had a tough time, like, actually making a list of movies that I thought were actually, like, worth revisiting. I don't know. This was a weird year for me, right, personally. There's stuff like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I liked it when I watched it, you know. Book's better. I don't need to be that guy. I don't know. So you want to go just, like, 5-1? You want to, like, go back and forth here?
Yeah, I'm a little... all right, why don't you start with yours?
All right, so cheating a little bit, I'm putting two here to start off with, two comedies. There's Something About Mary.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
I've seen it. Okay. I've seen it a couple times. I think I've maybe even seen it three times.
It
gets a little less, but I really enjoyed it.
That was one of the last times I've been in a theater with everyone just dying. I can't remember the last time that's actually happened, with, like, people just, like, falling over in laughter.
Right.
And then another comedy, which I've mentioned to you, I don't think you're, I'd be really surprised if you watched this, because it's a very specific demographic, but it's about, like, the last night of, like, high school. Can't hardly wait. Another fun movie. It's one of those movies that it all takes place in one night, you know, like, day to, like, dawn the next day.
What was it called again?
Can't Hardly Wait. It's a high school comedy. It'd be weird if it was on your list. If it was on your list, then you would be suspect.
Okay. Yeah, I never heard of it.
How about you, Matt? What's your number five?
I'm going with a documentary called Little Dieter Learns to Fly by Werner Herzog. It's a true story. And there was actually a film made of it later.
Okay, what the hell is that? It's about a
guy who was born in Germany, because Werner Herzog's from Germany. He makes it to the United States after the war and ends up becoming a pilot for the Americans, and he gets shot down, and he escapes the prison camp in Vietnam, And it's all about how he did it and stuff like that. And it's just a really interesting movie. I actually saw it in San Francisco. Werner Herzog spoke, you know, after the movie. So it was pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah. Little Dieter.
Little Dieter.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... Kristen Bale, it was a movie called Rescue Dawn that he did later on with Steve, what's that kind of, I can't remember his name.
Steve Zahn? Steve Dorff?
Yes, Steve Zahn.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first Steve I go to. Zahn is my go-to Steve. Okay. All right, I think my list is going to be way more normie now that you're starting off the bat with a little Dieter. Okay, so yeah, my number four, I'm kind of doing this on the fly here. Is going to be Christopher Nolan's Following. We already talked about it on the show. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies when I first watched it, like, holy crap, you can do that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember renting it, or probably my brother rented it, watching it. And, you know, first, like, oh, this is black and white, and then realizing, oh, this is really effing cool. And, like, just kind of, like, being drawn in with, like, just the mechanism of it.
Interesting director, that's for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number four, Matt.
Out of Sight, Steve Soderbergh.
I thought this would be on your list.
I love this movie. We just watched it a few weeks ago.
So I remember watching it in the theater and loving it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever revisited it. Is it funny?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, Clooney's very funny in it. And Jennifer Lopez is really good in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's got Steve Zahn in it and a bunch of other people.
I see a common theme here. Like, it's your Steve Zahn list.
You know, but I just really enjoy the movie. Elmore Leonard wrote the book, and Soderbergh does a great job. So, and it's a funny comedy that still makes me laugh.
All right, Matt, I'm going to Japan.
Okay.
It's a movie we talked about. It's about a cop who takes his wife on a trip, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
And, there's some murder along the way. Fireworks. Very brutal Japanese indie film. Very interesting the way that it's shot.
I don't think I've seen it.
We watched it for the show.
That's right. Yeah, we did watch it. That's right. Oh, yeah, that was... I keep getting them mixed up.
All right, Matt, number three?
This is going to... Maybe surprise the Truman Show. I really, really liked it. It was Peter Weir was a director, Australian director, but and Jim Carrey was great in it. Mm-hmm. I thought so.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that was totally ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. It's even more relevant now than it was when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those movies where when you first watch it, you're like, okay, it's kind of hokey, and then you think about it, you're like, well, actually, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was actually my number two.
Oh, good.
What's your number two, Matt?
The Thin Red Line.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I've watched over and over again. I saw it in theater a couple times out in San Francisco. It's just, to me, it's the poetry of war, I guess. That's what it reminds me of.
I think that one was a little bit above my head at the time. It's like very meditative.
Right. It's very, a lot of, you know, point of view talking and stuff like that. You know, a lot of dream stuff, kind of weird. But it's so quiet at times, and it's just this, you know, this big war, this big battle, and it just seems so quiet, you know. But
which is interesting because it came out the same year as my number one. Which, and my real number one is your number one, right. But I knew you were going to put it, so I put something different. So just to put that out there, like, Matt's number one is the official number one of the show, but my number one is Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Unimpeachable. The first 20 minutes of that movie, like, seeing it for the first time in the theater, it was unlike any other experience I could think of.
Right.
You know, up to that point, it's like, it just felt so real, it was so brutal. And it was just jaw-dropping the way it was filmed. It just felt like it never stopped. And then as a movie, it also works. You know, we get a little Matt Damon at the end. And who doesn't like a little Matt Damon at the end?
Yeah.
And it just start to finish, really, really good movie. I think it still holds up. Some of those movies were fun flipping through the channels, if I had channels. If it was on, I would stop and watch it for a few minutes and then, you know, move on.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it three or four times, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fabulous movie. I just didn't. I don't know. I mean, it should be in the top five, but you know, some movies that I like watching over and over again, you know, or something that means something. But the number one movie,
officially of the year.
Of the year. The Big Lebowski.
Of the decade. Close. Yeah. Well, I don't know about the decade, but it's close. Yeah, it's close. Of the second half of the decade, for sure.
Yeah. I think this has become my favorite Coen Brothers movie, where I think Fargo used to be, but this is now, I think. This is something, again, if I had channels and this is on, stop. Every time.
Every time.
Doesn't matter. And it still makes me laugh. Still fine. And I hear lines that I didn't really notice before. Because the last time I watched it, I realized that at some point the dude gets to say to the older Lebowski, "Where's the money, Lebowski?" And I never remember, really, because everybody's always saying that to him. So, you know, it's just stuff like that. It's a great movie. Great, great movie.
I mean, it's a cultural, like, touchstone. You know what I mean? Like, people, you know, go back to it all the time.
Yeah.
None of us mentioned Rushmore?
No.
No?
I'm not that big with Wes Anderson. I like some of his stuff. The Tannenbaums was good. Tannenbaums. Yeah, yeah. But some of his stuff is... We tried to watch his latest one, the Something Dispatch, the French Dispatch.
Yeah. Not good?
We watched 10 minutes of it. I don't think I laughed at all. You know? I don't know.
Yeah. I was trying to watch the Grand Budapest Hotel on on a plane one time. It just really didn't keep my interest. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was in the mood for it. Royal Tenenbaums is one of my favorite movies. Okay. And then everything else is just like...
Okay.
It's like Bottle Rocket. Fine. Like that, you know? Yeah. Yeah, it's like... I don't know.
No.
Yeah. There's a bit of a drop-off
for me. And neither one of us named the movie that won Best Picture that year.
I don't know what that is. It's Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Okay, so segue. All right, so we'll talk about Shakespeare in Love first, right? That's usually we talk about the...
Right.
All right. So, Shakespeare in Love. I watched this movie... probably at someone's house, probably some broad rented a movie and threw it in, and we all sat around and watched it.
Yeah.
This movie was interesting to watch again because I did not like it as a younger person. Watching it as a 41-year-old man, I was like, it's not bad.
It's not a bad movie. It really isn't. It's got some good people in it.
It's like cute. It's got some humor.
Yep. You learn a lot about Shakespeare, I think.
I think most of it's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
You learn a lot of incorrect knowledge about Shakespeare, which is always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely do you get to see the breasts of someone who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Right. So we got to see Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah.
I had forgotten all about that.
Totally shocked by that.
Right. And it's just not once. It's several times.
Many times. We get to see Joseph Fiennes. What happened to him?
His brother's a huge star, but
like him, like my wife was like, "Who is he?" Like in a way that was like kind of like, "Hey, why are you asking it like that?" And I'm sure he's had a fine career, but I don't know, man. Like who took his lane? Like who took over his spot? Ryan Gosling? Is that who would have been doing that part?
Probably.
If he was a little younger.
Yeah. Yeah, he's most known for Risen, Elizabeth. Merchant of Venice.
Risen is a movie about the death of Jesus, and it's not that bad.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's pretty, this is a dumb thing to say, but it's pretty heavy on the Christianity.
He's been doing some TV stuff. Sherwood, The Handmaid's Tale, things like that, so.
Cool. I guess maybe that's what he's doing, The Handmaid's Tale.
But he really, I mean, his... career went nowhere after this. I don't mean to say he's still working, but,
he's on the Handmaid's
Tale. I don't know any of these movies that he's in. Nothing.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And directed by someone I've never heard of, John Madden.
No.
I mean, I don't think it's the John Madden, right? It's not the coach, is it?
He's out there yelling at everybody. I didn't even look him up because I don't even know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we got a young Gwyneth Paltrow, we got Jeffrey Rush. And so this
Tom Wilkerson was one of my favorites. So he played the guy who was the apothecary.
The guy who was funding the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we meet a young, distraught William Shakespeare, who's kind of has writer's block. He's down and out, living in like the attic of some British town. And he's, you know, I guess the play business was a bit of a lull at that mm-hmm. time. The theater he was working for. With the guy was the movie starts with this guy getting his like feet burned,
right? Jeffrey Rush,
yeah, because he can't pay his debts,
right?
And so yeah, the theater's struggling. Shakespeare is the only hope. He starts writing this play. He sees a girl, mm-hmm. like one time, like
yeah,
that was the whole thing where I was like, okay, like this is. Is this how that worked back then? Like, just you see someone one time, yeah. and you're net smitten.
Yeah, well, that's just Shakespeare. That's what we, yeah.
And so we come to find that this is telling the story. This the fake story about how he wrote Romeo and Juliet, right. and we're seeing like he's kind of living it as he's writing it.
Right.
So it's pretty clever the way it was done.
And people keep giving him suggestions that mm-hmm. he takes
right.
and uses.
Well, I think one thing that this movie highlights is that Shakespeare is not afraid to steal.
No.
Yeah, he's the Carlos Mencia of British playwrights, 1500 British playwrights. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so he starts like writing the story. He meets Gwyneth Paltrow. She pretends to be a guy.
Mm-hmm. Which was illegal for women to appear on stage.
Yeah, I didn't really, there was no explanation. Like, what was that all about? Is that all a boot?
Just Elizabethan or whatever era that is, you know?
Yeah. Okay, let's roll with it.
Yeah.
So she's pretending to be a dude so she can be in his play because she's so taken by his poetry.
Right.
And then, of course, she's being married off. She doesn't want asshole. To. Colin Firth.
Yeah, who's always an asshole. Sometimes. Plays a good asshole.
Okay. And so he, yeah, so there's that conflict and... There's this weird scene where, like, they kiss, but she's wearing her mustache. She doesn't really, like, I don't know. Like, the whole thing that no one could realize that she was a woman was a little bit thin, right?
Almost Shakespearean.
Right. And there was, right. You're right. And there was this idea in this movie that, like, if you leaned in and no one else in the world could hear what you were saying. You know? There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that play, like, stage direction kind of stuff going on. So, you know, it was kind of cool the way that was weaved in. I don't know, the movie had some heart to it. It's yep. kind of funny.
Yep.
When they actually start doing the play, I thought like it didn't really drag the way I thought it was going to.
No, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. Like when it ended, I was like, okay, that was fine. Like that was 2 hours that I don't mind spending.
Right.
I wasn't like I didn't have to like keep stopping it. And I think it also helped that I watched it with my wife and she was really enjoying it. So mm-hmm. That's like a different vibe.
Oh, that's cool. It's a fun movie, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, it's not as good as the other ones that we named.
No. It's not the best movie of the year.
No,
it's fine.
Yeah,
like it's fine. It's a good date movie, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of this farcical, you know, Shakespeare could have written it kind of thing, you know, but. And it was fine. It had some good lines, you know. But, yeah. I mean, I didn't come away with, God, that was great, or anything like that. In fact, at times I really was kind of bored, I think. I thought it was a little too long, maybe. But
there's a little bit of, like, them trying to establish, like, their romance. But it's like, you've already made me believe that you fell in love at first sight instantly. Right. So
you don't need to keep doing it.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so it did drag a little bit as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. A little bit of like the, but I don't want to get married. And mm-hmm. like the whole scene where Shakespeare pretends to be like a woman mm-hmm. and goes to the whatever it is, like the, I don't even know if that was, like the pre-wedding presenting ceremony. Yeah. That was a little bit unnecessary, I would say.
Oh, yeah. He went to it was a palace, I think. Yeah, it was. You know, some of those scenes were really unnecessary, but that one dragged a little bit. Hmm. We haven't even mentioned Ben Affleck.
Hey, so here's how bad my memory is. Mm-hmm. I thought this movie was starring Ben Affleck. Mm. Like, were him and Gwyneth Paltrow like an item?
They were.
Okay, maybe that's what I was thinking.
I think that's why he was in it. Yeah. And he wasn't starring in the play either.
No,
he was the second. I die.
Right. Yeah, he was like the good comic relief.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's doing his Affleck thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was like definitely a good relief from Joseph Fiennes just like brooding.
Right.
So emo. Yeah. Too much mascara. Not a big fan.
Yeah, his brooding was a little too much to take, I think. It should have been more joy and laughter and stuff. I don't know. A lot going on in this movie.
So I will say the costume design, mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yep.
I thought Shakespeare's coat, his waistcoat, pretty fly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah. Kind of leather looking thing.
Yeah, and like the big poofy like pantaloons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, God, I bet in like 5 years Kanye West will be dressing like this. Like, it's all going to come full circle.
Pete Davidson might have him doing that by next year.
It's possible. And that's our celebrity gossip talk. Yeah, other than that, I don't know. I don't have much to say about the movie, actually. Like, no. It's one of those movies you're like, yeah, it's fine. Gwyneth Paltrow was annoying, but I usually find her annoying. Nothing new there.
Yeah, Judi Dench played herself, Elizabeth. Yeah. She's played in like 3 or 4 movies.
So, yeah, she was not really for me either.
No.
Okay, the Rat Kid.
Yeah.
There's a real big, like, the Rat Kid is never just okay.
Right.
Either he's a really big villain or he's like a hero.
Right.
I'm surprised in this one that he wasn't, I thought he was going to turn out to be a nice person, but he's just a rat kid through and through.
He was just a rat fucker. Even the queen mentioned it. You're just a rat fucker.
Yeah, he's just a little rat kid.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, man, I don't have much to say about this.
No. It was fine. We named 10 movies that were better from that year, and we could name 10 more that were better, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been Best Picture. And it surprised the shit out of a lot of people when it won.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
What was it up against? I'm going to pull this up real quick.
Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, right. We just mentioned all those movies it was up against. Wow. Yeah, that is pretty wild that that happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's one of those, like, everybody went, huh? What? Sort of like when Crash won that one year. It was just, people hated it and it still won.
I wonder if this one won because, like, if you like, are familiar with Shakespeare, like, if you took a class in college, throughout this whole movie, you can lean over to someone and whisper, like, actually.
Yeah.
And, like, give a little nugget. Maybe that's what it was. Like, the Academy made them feel good about that. They could do, like, actually.
I don't know.
Twelfth Night was written several plays after Romeo and Juliet. You know, I don't know. It is a weird movie. And I don't know. It's fine. I don't know. Like, nothing to say, Matt. Sorry.
Yeah. I wanted to give... I did look up John Madden, the director, and he did a movie called Miss Sloan that I really like. Jessica Chastain. That was pretty good, so got a big shout-out to him. But he hasn't directed that many movies. Oh, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He's okay. Well, anyways, he's more of a TV director, so... Mm. But yeah, there's not much to say. I mean, there's no way that you should have beaten Saving Private Ryan.
No.
No.
There's nothing about this movie that would make it better. Right. But, hey, crazy things happen. You want to guess the scores? 222,000 people checking in. This might be the most that we've looked at here in IMDb.
I will say 7.5.
You went way high. 7.1.
Oh, so we were right.
Well, I mean
yeah. 7.1's not, still not bad.
But. This is more like a 6.8 to me.
Yeah.
7.1. I'm guessing that's like equal parts, like people who love it and people who are like, why didn't my so and so make me watch this?
Yeah.
All right. Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think?
85.
The critics?
Yeah.
92.
Wow, that's pretty high.
Yeah, 140 reviews. Audience, over 100,000 people.
I will say 90.
80.
Oh.
Yeah, but 92 in the critics is pretty surprising.
That is.
That's very high. I think Ebert liked this movie.
No, I didn't look up this one. Anyways. I think we're going to take a break.
Yeah. I'll do the critics consensus real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Which I often forget. Endlessly witty, visually rapturous, and sweetly romantic, Shakespeare in Love is a delightful romantic comedy that succeeds on nearly every level.
Yeah, you gave it 4 stars.
Out of?
4.
I don't know what he gave Private Ryan, Saving Private Ryan. All right, so take a break?
Yep.
All right. Our second movie of the week that
could have won.
Yeah.
Neither one of us put it in our top 5, but it probably might have been in our top 10, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I'd never seen this movie.
That was mostly the reason for suggesting it. Mm-hmm. It's a movie you should see.
You should see.
And you should have seen it in 1997.
I should have.
It probably would have been a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit, you would have liked it more, I think.
I was too busy watching A Thin Red Line and The Big Lebowski. So yeah, I probably would have, I don't know.
Life is Beautiful.
Right.
Roberto Benigni. Am I saying that right?
Who can forget his Oscar appearance, climbing over all the chairs and just being himself. Everybody laughing. Chaplin could have done this one.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, as I was watching this, I was trying to think, like, who's the modern Benigni? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the answer is just Benigni.
Right.
But, like, yeah, like, Chaplin, like, who, I was trying to think, who else could have played this role? Like, in, like American.
Yeah, American.
I couldn't think of anyone modern. Like, there's probably someone who's, like, coming to everyone's mind
Robin
besides me.
Robin Williams.
That's the first, but he's dead, right?
Yeah.
So, I was trying to think, that's the only one that came to mind. Right. Someone just has that manic energy, and just, you always know, like, they're going way out there, but they're going to land it.
Yeah.
That was the only person I could think of. I couldn't think of anyone else. No. Like, because, like, that manic energy, like, you would think, like, I don't know, someone like Chris Tucker, but he's way too, I mean, he's, like,
yeah,
he's way too out there.
I mean, Benigni was pretty far out there.
He was pretty far out there. But it was always, like, there was so much joy in everything that he was doing, right? It was always fun and nice and friendly. And, it's just like,
he was a sweet guy.
Yeah, right. It's like, here's a Nazi. Oh, I'm going to put a pie in his face. Hey, it was that kind of thing. And it was just weird, like, to watch it again and just be like, okay, this is... The first half of this movie felt more like Cholet than I remembered. Mm-hmm. Like, I expected them to start, like, hugging and singing and, like, break into, like, a music video or something. It just takes so long to get to it.
It was... The first half was way too long.
And, like... I was like, why do they have this? Like, it's not necessarily, like, building tension between, like, the Italians and, like, the Germans. Mm-hmm. or even between the Jews and the non-Jewish Italians, I mean.
Yeah, we get nothing. I mean, there's very little mention. There are fascists. They're at the table sometimes or in the, you know. But there's no real tension between the two. I mean, they might say something that's... awful, but
like the racist inspector shows up and he does that kind of funny scene where he's like, yeah, of course I'm the supreme race, look at these earlobes. That was pretty funny.
I mean, a lot of it was like that. It was like, oh, okay, he turning the tables on everybody, but it went on too long as far as I was concerned.
Right, it's like, God, get to the concentration camp already.
Couldn't wait till they get to the concentration.
When's the Holocaust start?
Right.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I was like, because at first I couldn't figure out the timeline. I knew at first it was 1939. We go through this hour-long first half where he's, meets this woman and falls in love and steals her or something. We don't know that. You know,
he literally steals her.
He literally steals her. And then it just, you know, just bogs down right there. And it's just like, oh, my God, let's just move it along. And then, you know, I couldn't figure out the timeline because it was 1939. And all of a sudden he's got a kid who can talk and walk. And I'm going, wait a minute.
Maybe a five-year-old?
Yeah, that's what he was. He was a five-year-old. But then it turns out to be 1945. And I'm going, wow, they were still taking Jews to prison camps in 1945, right before the end of the war.
Well, maybe they weren't thinking it was about to end, you know? Yeah. they thought this thing was going to keep going.
Yeah, that's true. The fascists.
Plus, if your job is to pick up the Jewish people and take them to the concentration camp, you still want to get paid, right? Still going to do your job.
I wonder a little bit about the real history of this. Were the Nazis, because they were Germans that were the prisoner of war, this camp, right?
Yeah, but in their town, they were being harassed by
Italian
local fascists.
Yeah, local fascists.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascists with a...
But I'm wondering, you know, because we went into Italy in like 1943.
Man, if you wanted me to like prepare like a history of like European battles, like you need, I mean, I need more time than that. You can't just throw this on me, Matt.
Yeah, we don't really know where this camp was. Could have been in Germany.
It's true.
They put them on, you know, trains, took them somewhere, but it never says when and where. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm just nitpicking, but, you know, it really doesn't pick up until he gets to the concentration camp.
Well, I think, like, Shakespeare in Love, like, don't worry about the accuracies. Just mm-hmm. go with it, mm-hmm. right? Like, you get the vibe, right? The vibe is his life is happy, some fascists are here now, and now everything sucks.
Right.
Like, that's...
That's pretty much it.
That's what we need to understand, I think. Yeah. But, yeah, like, the part where he's, like, meeting his wife, or like, he's, like, courting his wife, dragged way too long, mm-hmm. and nothing was really happening, right? I guess we're kind of getting a sense that he's a goofball, but, I mean, do you not know that after the first 7 minutes of the movie?
I mean, the guy is just nonstop talking. Right. He's one of those people that just never stops. No matter what, who else is talking, he's talking over him.
God, could you imagine, like, a road trip with that dude?
Well, it wouldn't last very long.
No.
Either him and I would be hitchhiking.
No, I would pull off at like Randolph and be like, hey, go get me some combos. And then, I'm out of there.
Oh, God. It's just nonstop.
Tough hang. Very tough hang. Mm-hmm. Seems like a nice person. Mm-hmm. Do not want to hang out with him.
Right.
Just seems like a lot. Just like.
He's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
He's getting sucked out of the room, you know.
And I never knew anything about him. Like, the only thing I knew about Roberto Benigni is, like, Dennis Miller would use him in jokes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's probably funny. I have no idea who that person is. That's a reference.
Yeah, he's done some stuff here in the States with Jim Jarmusch and things like that. Down by Law and things like that. But, yeah, I don't know that much about him. I think I've only seen him in a couple movies. One was... Down by Law, and one was this. I've never seen him in anything else. Mm-hmm. Oh. And the one where he played a taxi driver, too. It was several stories Jarmusch did. I can't remember now.
Gotcha. All right, so as we said, this movie switches gears when he gets picked up because he's Jewish. Mm-hmm. He's put on a train, his kid gets put on a train. The wife fights to get also put on a separate train, but going to the same place.
Because she's not Jewish.
Well, yeah, seems like I don't know, maybe an odd move.
For her?
Yeah.
Well, they had to.
I guess. I mean,
there had to be somebody at the end to take the kid.
Right, that's why you don't get on the train.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, maybe just... You know, say, yeah. Oh, I'll be here just in case you survive.
I guess she didn't want to live if she wasn't going to live with her. She loved him. He was a lovable goofball, but...
If living is without you. Yeah, you're right. I guess so. I just, you know, kind of a move, kind of a choice. Mm-hmm. So they all end up in concentration camp. We don't really see the wife anymore. She kind of just fades into the background. We know she's there. We know she's not dead. We get enough of that. And then Benigni convinces his kid that this whole thing is like a big, elaborate game.
Big squid game.
Yeah. Right. Survive until the end. That's where they got the idea of squid game. And he's coming up with all these, like, you know, oh, actually, no, because they did this, you're going to get a tank at the
end.
You get
points for, you got to have 1,000 points to win. And if you do this, you do certain things, you know, you get points off, like ask for snacks and things like that. So preparing them to play this game. And it's a game of life.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, watching this again, it was just, I don't know, it was weird to sort of, first of all, like, it wasn't as funny as I remembered. Like, it wasn't as, like, slapsticky funny as I thought it was going to be. And it's just, like, it was mostly, most of the movie was sad, beaten down people walking into a room. And then Benigni trying to convince his smiling kid that everything's okay.
Right.
And it's just, like, it just kept happening. Yeah. And, like, after, like, the third time, it's like, okay, Jesus, like,
yeah, when he walks in to that barracks the first time, and he's just yapping away, and nobody tells him to shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Because I really believe that somebody would have said, shut up.
You would think so. But see, I was thinking about that too, but maybe they were, like, somehow uplifted by, like, the kid being around too, right? Maybe they're like, hey, at least someone is trying to entertain us somehow, right, you know, a little bit. It's better than, like, absolute silence.
And then he does that little thing where the German asks if anybody speaks German. He says he does, and he gives us, and that went on forever.
I thought that was the funniest scene of the movie.
Yeah. No, it was good, because it was all bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just, but he's telling his kid what to do.
Right.
And none of the Germans understood it, so.
Right.
None of the Italians understood what the German was saying, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's just, I mean, there was too many scenes that went on and on and on, I thought. And I just lost interest in some of them.
Yeah, it's funny because this movie, like, lowered in my estimation after a second watching. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare in Love rose in my estimation after a second watching.
Right.
And they're both kind of about even in my mind.
Yeah, and there's no, that's what I was, at the end of the day, I went, well, I mean, one's not really better than the other. You know, and like I said at the beginning of the show, we named a lot of movies that were a lot better than both of these, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing maybe it's just like a cultural thing, but like all the, like, the big, like, running around and like the yelling, and I just, like, the hijinks? I don't know. I just wasn't there for it. I just wasn't into it.
No.
Like the whole first, like,
it left me wanting something else, and I don't know what it was. I mean, I thought I would feel sadder at the end. You know, and I didn't. I mean, I cry at commercials. Right. You know? I cry at everything. Uh-huh. I didn't really tear up with this one. I guess that's why I didn't see it the first time when it first came out. I didn't. After seeing him at the Oscars, I went, now he's one of those guys.
Right. So at the end, he gets, like, dragged off. Yeah. And, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen. Even if I've already seen it, I don't remember what's going to happen. Mm. And this German soldier's kind of, like, pushing him down the road. And he's looking back to his son. He's like, ah, it's okay. He's, like, doing this funny walk.
Yeah.
And this German soldier pushes him around the corner, just machine guns him unceremoniously off camera.
That's it.
And we see the German soldier walk out, and that's it.
And the little boy's in hiding.
Yep.
And he doesn't even know what happened to his father.
Hmm. So yeah, maybe that's why. Because maybe it's just cut. You know, it's not drawn out.
Right.
You don't even get, like, the sad music. It's just like, this guy doesn't exist in this movie anymore.
Hmm. No, it's all about him. The kid is telling a story later on.
Hmm.
But now it's just him and his mom. So who somehow made it through.
Yeah, I think maybe in my memory, this movie was somehow, like, it was funnier because it was darker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that intersection of, like I really like the gallows humor.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't really get a lot of the gallows in this.
No.
You know? Like, I mean, obviously you saw the people walking in. And they're carrying those, like, whatever, those big irons or whatever. And they mentioned the gas chambers. And there was a scene where he does see the dead bodies. But it wasn't, like, hanging over the whole movie.
No.
And, you know, it was more, like, joyous. It was brighter. Yeah. I don't know what the right word is.
Benigni said he got caught hell from both sides of the political spectrum.
Of course.
You know.
Well, I would imagine people saying, like, you're downplaying the Holocaust.
Right, right.
Well, what's the other side?
That, like, all Italians weren't fascist or German, that kind of stuff, you know.
You're making it seem worse than it was, something like that. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, how much worse can it be?
Yeah, because what is the ultimate point of the movie? I mean, it's called Life is Beautiful.
Right.
So I guess it's you're supposed to, like, find joy in even the worst times?
I guess it's all about a father just protecting his son at all costs. I mean, it's not really about the Holocaust. We don't really get that much from it. I mean, yeah, we are in a concentration camp, but, you know, it's not like Schindler's List or something. You know, but that's what that's about. It's about a man saving the Jews, but it's also about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. This one is sort of, it's a little bit about it.
It's about perspective, It's about, like, what you look at, how you look at it, how you, like, it's not about what you do, it's how you react. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because for the most part, he's, you know, upbeat, even in the worst of times, just for his son and his wife, or whatever. You know, but I mean, there was too many things that, like, that the when he turned the music on and at the dinner, and he put the phonograph out, he could through the window so his wife could hear it. That kind of stuff was like, okay. Yeah. And none of the Germans say anything,
right?
He sort of got away with a lot.
Yeah, this movie also had the thing where if you lean in and talk, nobody else in the room can hear you.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, I guess that's just the way things were in the late 90s.
Yes.
Is this movie better or worse with the Ben Affleck cameo?
Oh, my God.
Ben Affleck is a German soldier who happens to speak English. Because
nice guy.
I don't know his German accent capability.
First you think he's an asshole, then he helps you.
Yeah. Need more Affleck.
Yeah.
I think we're the minority, Matt. I think this movie is absolutely beloved.
Well,
I think these are people who saw it one time in 1997 and they need to see it again.
Right. I mean, I understand why he won Best Actor, but
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
he did it at the Oscars.
Right. It's like, you just showed us you're not acting. You're just a crazy person. Like, so right. I don't know that it's like the Christopher Walken, Vince Vaughn thing. It's like, you're a real interesting person, but I don't know you're a good actor.
Right.
You're good at being you.
Right.
And that's good for some things, but it's not good all the time.
Benigni, I don't know.
A couple things I did like about the movie. Okay. I really did like the doctor character. And I liked that little arc.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Horst Buchholz.
Okay.
Have you ever seen The Magnificent Seven?
No.
He was in that.
Okay.
He played a Mexican or something.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Perfect.
Like Chico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So I liked that, you know, we see them kind of develop this friendship when Benigni's a waiter and the doctor is like, you know, just really focused on like his riddles or whatever, but he seems very kind, a little bit like absent-minded, what a lovable kind of old goofy doctor. Then we realize he's not absent-minded. He's just completely single-minded and self-absorbed. And even during the Holocaust, you know, you think he's going to save Benigni. He's like, no, I need to talk to you.
I need help from you.
Yeah. You need to help me. I need your help. Yeah.
You don't need my help.
Yeah, like, you can't imagine the jam I'm in.
Right. You know? I can't figure out this riddle that a friend of mine sent me. And, you know, yeah. And he turns out to be just this vacuous human being.
And I love that because that is how I imagine most people who, like, for lack of better words, like, let the Holocaust happen. Mm-hmm. That's, like, the attitude.
Right.
Like, well, I'm thinking about me. So I just love that was represented in that way. That was like one of the, I thought, really great things.
That was a point where I came to that part and I'm thinking, is he really going to help him? You know, and he even tells his son, you know, we're going to leave soon because he thinks that the doctor's going to help him.
Yeah.
And it turns out he's just a scumbag.
Mm-hmm. Well, not even a scumbag.
Self-absorbed.
Yeah, right. He's not malicious.
Right.
He's just, you know, only thinking about himself, hyper focused on himself. Anyway, that was one part I thought was pretty good.
And the woman who played Dora
Benigni's wife is his real wife.
Oh.
Nicoletta Bracci.
Okay.
So she probably heard him talk before. Go on and on. God.
My God. And the kid who played Josue, which I guess is Italian for Joshua?
Yeah.
Giorgio Cantanari went on to play the kid in Gladiator. So he's got a couple of major movie roles under his belt.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a pretty good year then. Pretty good few years.
Pretty good run there.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, man.
He was good. Actually, for his age, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he wasn't obnoxious or, yeah.
Bad at hiding.
Yes.
Like, when they would open the door to the barracks, there'd be a scene of him, like, jumping down. It's like, how are you not being seen? Like, you're terrible at this.
You're lousy.
You're a lousy kid. All right. Anything else you want to say about it?
No, I was disappointed. I thought I would like it more.
I thought you would too. I thought I would too. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dud week. Kind of like a. Did you watch this with any of these with Gloria, or did you just do them solo? No. Okay. Yeah, I wonder if she would have liked this. I don't know if she would like this or not.
She's seen it. She says it's too sad.
Oh. Okay. Maybe something wrong with us. Because I'm like, it wasn't sad enough. You say it wasn't sad enough. We want that dark.
I mean, after Shakespeare in Love, I was like, okay, that's all right. You know, this one, I was like, oh my God. I was disappointed.
Yeah?
All right. I don't know.
Yeah, probably the last Benigni film I'll be seeking out. I assume all his movies are like this, right? There's him over the top doing his thing.
It was the one he did with Jarmusch. I think it was Night in the City, or something. There were a bunch of vignettes with taxi drivers.
Okay.
So Night on Earth, and he's sort of a Roman taxi driver. So, you know, it's interesting. But yeah, he gives me the.
Maybe a young.
A little bit goes a long way.
Maybe a young Martin Short.
Yeah,
I kind of get that energy.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not even. Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell would be the annoying person who would just be like constantly like pawing at you or whatever, right, you know, right, like just to like get your attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think like the modern American equivalent. But I can take about as much Benigni as I can Martin Short. Mm-hmm. That's like, I'm like. Okay, that's like, I need to like mute this man.
Night on Earth, like I said, it's a bunch of. Winona Ryder is in it. She's a taxi driver. Gina Rowlands, who was married to John Cassavetes.
Okay.
Giancarlo Esposito is in it. Armin Mueller-Stahl, you've probably seen him in German parts before. Rosie Perez.
Oh, well, I heard.
And don't recognize. And Roberto Benigni. But
so interesting. Okay, yeah. I might check that out.
Five taxis, five cities, one night.
Is that the tagline?
Yeah.
All right, Matt, you want to get some scores here?
I'm going to go with the 8.
Okay, hold on. Before you guess, let me give you some context.
Okay.
So I said last time 222,000 is one of our highest ones. Mm-hmm. This is 671,000 people. So it's, you know.
Bigger.
Three times that. So you said 8?
Yeah.
You went low. 8.6.
Holy smoly.
Yeah, this.
That's the second highest one we've had, isn't it?
Yeah, this.
Godfather was number one.
Is one of the highest rated movies on IMDb. Let me find its proper place. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's just between The Green Mile and City of God.
Oh, God, The Green Mile. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I love City of God. We liked it.
Yeah. This is like, I'll go 20. 20 is Seven Samurai.
Okay.
21, It's a Wonderful Life. 22, Silence of the Lambs. 23, Saving Private Ryan. 24, City of God. 25, Life is Beautiful. A couple spots, just two slots above Star Wars.
Wow. Oh my God. Maybe we didn't see the same movie.
I don't think we did. yeah, that's really insane. What do you think about, so having said that, what do you think about Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to go 98 on that one.
No, so it's all out of whack, man. Tomato meter, 80%.
That's the critics.
That's the critics.
Wow.
I think the critics didn't like it as much as the people did.
Yeah. So here we go. So I'm gonna find a couple of negative reviews. Okay, so this is BBC.com. We've heard of that, right? How appealing you find it will probably depend on your response to Benigni's screen-hogging routines. The line between endearing and irksome is a fine one.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty spot on, man. Yeah, that's kind of what I would say. this is from eFilmCritic.com. Never heard of it, but with Life is Beautiful, the final frontier of schmaltz has been reached. I feel like schmaltz is something you don't... It's like cool, right?
Yeah.
It's like you don't know it till you see it.
Schmaltzy, yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of this undefinable thing.
Ebert gave it 3.5 stars. He didn't... He didn't love it that much.
So I think Ebert's quote was, "It's no Shakespeare in Love."
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got to give some movies good... I don't know, like...
What was the...
The audience? The
audience.
Over 100,000 people, 96.
See, the audience liked it. Us critics, we don't like it.
I think most people are not like you and me in this sense. They want to watch a movie and feel good.
Right.
Like, whereas I don't. No. I
want to feel whatever it makes me feel. I don't care if it makes me feel good, bad, sad, or whatever.
I want to think.
Right.
Or I want to feel something I've never felt before, you know? Or like go, huh, that's interesting. Like something like that. But just, you know, I don't know. This movie, it ends with a guy dying, but still it's kind of a happy ending. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very weird ending. And the tank driver, who's that guy?
I don't know.
Like, terrible actor.
He's probably a real GI.
I was going to say, he was like a cameraman's cousin or something. Yeah. Like, it was very weird. Mm. It just felt like... A Ford movie, like, oh, we need an American. Get that one.
Hey, what's your name?
Yeah. All right, Matt, here's the critics' consensus. Benigni's earnest charm, when not overstepping its bounds into the unnecessarily treacly? That's a word I've never seen before.
What is it?
Treacly? T-R-E-A-C-L-Y? Treacly?
Treacly? I've never heard of it.
So when not overstepping its bounds into the unnecessarily treacly, offers the possibility of hope in the face of unflinching horror. See, and so I think the plot of the movie is like what people are focusing on. Like, oh, yeah, it's a movie about this guy who cheers up his kid during the Holocaust. But, like, it just didn't come off that well. It just wasn't, like, executed well. It's a great idea.
Right.
But it was just weird.
I'm at a loss for words. Because I've talked to many people who love this movie, and I didn't at all.
Treacly is excessively sentimental.
Oh, never heard of that. Have you ever seen a movie called Jacob the Liar, Robin Williams?
No.
It's kind of similar to this, I think. During World War II, an ordinary inhabitant of the ghetto fakes news about Allied offenses to inspire hope for the others of the Nazi regime.
Okay.
Yeah. It didn't get an 8.6.
God, so is that one of the top 25 movies of all time, according to the masses?
It's not even one of Robin Williams' top 25 movies of all time.
Probably not. All right, so next week, is that our last week? No, we still have one more. So next week, we are stepping into the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So the best director of 2008 is Danny Boyle for Slumdog Millionaire. It's not a bad movie.
Not a bad movie.
I'm curious to see how it holds up on a second viewing.
Yep, me too.
And I'm going to have you watch The Dark Knight. Finally, I get you to watch a superhero movie directed by Christopher Nolan.
Okay. Well, who I love, so, yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting.
Mm.
So, I've only seen Slumdog once.
Me too, in the theaters.
And I was on Millionaire.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. We're going to get some comparisons between
The reality. The reality of the show. Yeah,
Matt's going to be like, actually, it wasn't like that.
I have one main point that I remember exactly.
Save it for next week, Matt.
Never would have happened.
All right, let's get out of here.
All right, bye.
Peace.
He's a Philistine. Langfostin.
It's a guy who doesn't care about books or interesting films and things.
The Langfostin.
No, you're interested in books and things.
No, I'm a Philistine.
You've been shitting in my yard.
I have not.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
So, Jane, what you do here in effect is count boners.
It's fun.